Noenoe Silva is professor of Indigenous and Hawaiian politics and language, Hawaiian language, at Manoa. She was the first to document Native Hawaiian resistance to U.S. annexation in petitions signed by 95% of the Native population here. Noenoe spearheaded translation of early Hawaiian newspapers, a rich repository of culture, politics, and intellectual life. We welcome her on the publication of her new book, The Power of the Steel-Tipped Pen, Reconstructing Native Hawaiian Intellectual History. Great to have you here, Noenoe.
I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you.
Great. Well, your book here is, it explores the writings of two men. One, Joseph Kanepu'u from Kalawao, Molokai. The other, Joseph Poipoi from Kohala, Hawaii. Can you tell us a little bit about them?
Yes, Joseph Kanepu'u is the older of the two. Mm-hmm. He was born in about 1824, Molokai, and then he settled here on Oahu, mostly self-educated. He went to the mission school on Molokai until about middle school age, but then he continued to self-educate and was asked by his neighbors here on Oahu to become a school teacher. So he did that, and then he began writing for the newspapers. So he contributed Molokai versions of familiar stories that were quite different than the versions that, say, the better-known Samuel Kamakau wrote.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. And the other gentleman, Joseph Poipoi.
Joseph Moku Ohai Poipoi, as you said, was born in Kohala. His father was G.W. Poipoi, and I haven't been able to ascertain what those initials stand for. It turns out his father was also known as G.W. Kahiolo and wrote the very first mo'olelo ever published in the papers, which was Kamapua'a. So he, Poipoi, followed in the footsteps of his father and far exceeded his father in terms of writing. He went to secondary school at Ahui Manu Catholic Seminary, which eventually turned into St. Louis and Chaminade.
And he settled on Oahu as well.
Yes, he settled on Oahu as a boy.
He was an attorney.
And he trained. He was first a school teacher, and then he trained in the law in Kohala, and then here on Oahu and became an attorney. So he wrote many, many different genres. He was a political reporter. Mm-hmm. He translated laws into Hawaiian, and he wrote many of our most beloved epics.
And a lot of this came out in the newspapers, which were such a vibrant resource in those days. Tell us a little bit about that culture, the newspaper culture.
By the time Kanepu'u was writing, there were several newspapers being published. Some were independent.
So that's mid-1800s. There are already several newspapers.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So some were church papers. Mm. In the beginning, all papers were missionary papers. Uh-huh. And then an independent paper came out in 1861. And Kanepu'u was one of the founders of that paper. And then later on, he wrote in several other newspapers. So the newspapers are important because it was there that public opinion was influenced, possibly formed. It was there that people debated. They were also the site where people recorded deaths and then the mourning and condolence chants and letters. So that's where we find out biographies of people. Huh. That was where our literature was published with a few exceptions. Almost all of our literature was published as serials in the Hawaiian language newspapers.
These are Hawaiian language. About how many newspapers were they? They were on all the islands.
Well,
right?
Most newspapers were published in Honolulu, but they were mailed out. And there were regular mail deliveries to all the islands. And so everybody got them from Niihau to the Big Island. And then in 1906, there was a paper established, at least one. But the one I know most about, Hoku o Hawaii, was established in Hilo. And that turned out to be the last newspaper. It lasted for 42 years.
Whoa. Yeah. So it kind of captured the vitality of, I guess, intellectual life at the time in Hawaiian language.
Yes. Yes, uh-huh. Absolutely. And all different genres in our language are in there. Geography, riddling, songs.
Riddling. Oh, my gosh. That must
riddling
be so complicated.
Riddling is a very big, very big.
How does that work?
Well, someone would come up with a riddle and send it
into
the letter. How many chickens
crossed a row?
Well, they were more complicated
yeah, I'm sure.
than that. They usually took the form of, for example, they used fish as a metaphor for everything. So they'd say, my fish was born in the ocean and comes of age on land and it can slip through your fingers or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And then people would write in and propose answers, and eventually it turns out that the answer is salt. So
uh-huh.
that's just one.
Okay.
So they were, you know, like that. Some were puns, like many of ours in
of
English.
Of course.
So, yeah, everything was in there. Politics, many political debates, genealogical debates were huge and would sometimes go on for years.
And was there a reflection of the layers of meaning that spoken language had?
Most definitely. In fact, it became even easier to do that on the written page because in speaking, as you know, Hawaiian has short and long vowels, for example. And it also has the glottal stops, which weren't assigned a consistent letter to represent them until the mid-20th century. So prior to that, you know, the words would be written without any indication whether it was a long vowel or a short vowel. So you could take a word like lalo and lalo, so lalo is to wander and lalo is to grab. So you could do a lot of puns.
Go a lot of places with that.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, what did it seem to you that their world was like? How was their world different from ours?
Well, for one thing, it was a very Hawaiian-dominated world.
What's that like?
It's, you know, everybody spoke Hawaiian, almost everybody. People who moved here, this was our country, and that was our language. So anybody who moved here and wanted to do business or just get along, if you lived here, you needed to learn our language. So this was a Hawaiian language world. So my great-grandparents from China and from Portugal and from the Netherlands, they all spoke Hawaiian.
Mm. I almost feel like I'd feel closer to nature speaking Hawaiian for some reason. Would that work that way?
Maybe, because so much of the figurative language, just as in English, a lot of figurative language is taken from nature,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Mm-hmm. It's so exciting to discover another world through language. I mean, we know how language shapes our intellect. Certainly a whole other world opening up in your exploration of the intellect of that time.
Yes. Something I tell my students all the time is that in different languages, none of the categories match. So you really have to think about, or people do imagine things in a different way. For example, it might be surprising to think that there's no word for hand in Hawaiian because your lima goes from the tip of your fingers to the top of your arm. That's your lima. So the category just simply doesn't match. And everything's like that. So when you're in that world, you imagine things differently.
Oh, it's so great to be able to just tip our toes into that world with you in this book, The Power of the Steel-Tip Pen. Thanks so much, Noi Noi.
Thank you, Noi.
Noi Noi Silva is Professor of Indigenous and Hawaiian Politics at UH Manoa. Her new book, The Power of the Steel-Tip Pen, Reconstructing Native Hawaiian Intellectual History, is out on Duke University Press. Find out more about the Indigenous Politics Program, and you can find it with this interview on the HPR website.